Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, a Friday podcast all about the Kindle. My name is Len Edgerly, and this is episode 25 for January 9, 2009. Downtown Denver tonight, looking out at the Daniels and Fisher Tower, which was the tallest building west of the Mississippi when it was built in 1910 as part of the Daniels and Fisher department store. The store is gone, but the tower remains as a distinctive Denver landmark, and tonight it's still seasonally lit with green, red, and white lights and decorations, so it's a pretty sight outside the window of my study. My guest for this week's interview is Leslie Nickel, an author of the Amazon Kindle Frequently Asked Questions, or FAQ, resource. She knows what most people are asking about the Kindle, so she'll have some helpful tips, especially if you're relatively new to the joys of kindling. But she's also very savvy about what's going on, so even if you're an old-timer, you're going to learn some things from the interview with Leslie, so I hope you'll enjoy it. In Kindle News, a New York Times financial column today made a convincing case that the Kindle is single-handedly adding a $9 billion premium to Amazon's market valuation. This week's tech tip may be helpful if you've got a blog you'd like to see available for subscription on the Kindle store, your own blog. The Kindle quote this week is from someone who correctly foretold the market collapse last fall, so you may be interested in hearing what he's predicting for 2009. I had lots of comments in this past week, which was great. We'll hear on the show comments from Will Delamater, Stephen Schwind, Mary, Karen, Rebecca, Bob Cope, Paul Higginbotham, Linda Hopkins, Joe D. Clark, and a Twitterer named Colinas. I also received lots of good comments from listeners who emailed me requesting to be put on the Kindle Chronicles email alert list. That list today totals 40 people, 40 listeners, who receive immediate notification when I post an episode, as well as occasional breaking news alerts. I have all 40 names in my favorite wool tilly hat here by my desk, and at the end of the show I'm going to draw a winner for a $10 Amazon gift certificate right as I'm recording the episode. So stay tuned, no fair fast-forwarding till the end. And if you're not on the alert list and you'd like to be, you can just send me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com and I'll be glad to add you. I think, Darlene, if my wife Darlene's still up, I'm going to see if she can draw that winning name for me. Turning now to Kindle News, Linda Hopkins tipped me off to a financial column today titled "What's the Kindle Worth to Amazon?" at the New York Times website. The answer of authors Jeff Siegel, Rob Cox, and Robert Cryan is an astounding $9 billion. Here's how they arrived at what they call the Kindle premium. They start by positing that Amazon, with analysts estimating its sales will grow 12.5% this year, should be valued at 20 times earnings in terms of its stock price, compared with only 5% growth by its rival Walmart, which is valued at 14 times earnings. That would make Amazon's core business of selling books, DVDs, and everything else worth about $13 billion. They continue, quote, "Amazon's current $24 billion market capitalization represents a whopping premium to that figure. Even stripping out $2 billion of cash, $9 billion of value is apparently unaccounted for. Could that be the Kindle premium? Amazon is trying to copy Apple's stunning success with its elegant iPod and cheap and user-friendly music store," the authors continue. "The Kindle is not there yet, but it is getting closer. This year, Amazon is redesigning it, and a student version is also expected, an attempt to snag part of the $5.5 billion annual United States college textbook market. iPod sales grew fourfold in 2004 after Apple introduced its second-generation device. If Amazon could achieve a similar trajectory, that would mean selling 2.2 million Kindles this year based on Citigroup's estimate of 2008 sales. At an iPod-like 30% net profit margin, that would bring in about $240 million in earnings." So the authors, by adding estimated Kindle ebook sales and earnings, they arrive at a total Kindle earnings figure of more than $330 million, and then they conclude the $9 billion Kindle premium would then amount to something like 27 times expected earnings from the gadget. That's lofty, but as anyone who bet against the iPod a few years ago can attest, not necessarily out of this world. Well, I love this piece, partly because it provides some number-crunching confirmation for my own largely intuitive decision a couple of months ago to invest a tidy little chunk of my IRA in Amazon stock at $51. It closed today at $55.51, and I plan to hold on to it until I'm really, really old as a nice memento of the birth of the Kindle and this podcast. This week's tech tip arose from an email I received from Charles Hugh Smith, who blogs at oftwominds.com and who yesterday wrote, "Hi, I found your site via Google and you seem very well informed on the Kindle. I am hoping you can direct me to some resources on how to make my blog available on the Kindle. A reader suggested it, but I can't find anything on Amazon's DTP, that's the digital text platform, to help. If you know of any site or page, I would greatly appreciate a URL. Thank you. I knew there was a form to submit a blog, but I'd forgotten how to find it, so I simply called Amazon's Kindle support and was given the following simple steps, which I passed along to Charles. So if you have a blog that you want to see on the Kindle store, here's what you do. First, on your computer, go to Amazon.com, and under the Shop All Departments pull-down menu at the upper left of the homepage, you'll click on Books, and then this is on the pull-down menu. You go to Books and then slide over to Kindle. On the Kindle store line, you'll see a tab marked Kindle Blogs, so you click on that. Then you scroll down till you see on the left side of the screen, Calling All Bloggers. You click on the link named Here, and that will bring you to a form to fill out, and Amazon will process it and let you know if they're going to list your blog on the Kindle. I have submitted my own blog for listing and have not heard back from Amazon. I assume it's a fairly small number of submitted blogs that get listed for purchase as Kindle subscriptions. I did check out Charles's blog at oftwominds.com and was impressed with the provocative, well-written content. Turns out he's author of a book titled Weblogs and New Media, Marketing in Crisis, and that's also available as a Kindle edition for $4. So, like I say, if you've got a blog and you'd like your relatives and the rest of us to be able to subscribe to it on the Kindle, you've really got nothing to lose by submitting it to Amazon. And if yours is accepted, I hope you'll please let me know, and I'd be glad to mention it here on the podcast. I interviewed Leslie Nickel for this episode by phone on Monday, December 29th, when I was still in Cambridge. A nurse in Portland, Maine, Leslie is also the editor of two professional nursing journals, and she has her own business working with people on writing and publishing, mainly on health-related topics, but also other things. She also does consultation on research. In the Kindle sphere, she has a strong following as an author of the Amazon Kindle FAQ, which is a top-selling resource for the Kindle available at the Kindle store for $1.59. I began by asking Leslie when she had the idea to create the FAQ.
You know, as it would drift down in the board, you know, people would bump it up. You know how you see that message bump to bring it back to the top. And then one day, like I said, after it had been up for about 3 or 4 weeks, we saw that it was stickied at the top of the forum. And there was a message from the Amazon Kindle team that said, "We think this information is useful, so we've stickied it to the top of the board."
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, so which also lets you know that there are people at Amazon that at least scan the forum. Then it got long, and so then people would keep asking the same questions even in the FAQ, and they would say, you know, and people would say, "Come on, just go through. It's already been answered." So that's when I got the idea to pull it all together and put it in a little Kindle book that people could put on their Kindle, and then they could search. You know, they'd have that search capability, which they wouldn't have looking at it on the forum.
Right. Now, and it's done pretty well in the Kindle store. It's the ranked 503 in the whole store at this point. So,
yeah,
not bad.
No, not bad. Not bad for a little $1.59 pamphlet.
Can you say how many copies you've sold?
It went up on September 3rd, and I think we're getting close to 2,000 now.
That's great.
Yeah.
Are you, the version I've got, I'm not sure when I bought it, probably a month or so ago, do you do updates that you could reload so that you get a more current version of it?
That's what we're planning to do, but I actually haven't changed anything since the first one went up on September 3rd. Mm-hmm. You know, I do want to update it and, you know, keep it current. And I'm sort of keeping a list of, you know, new questions to add that people have brought up. One of the things, my goal is to really have it be frequently asked questions. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, well, Leslie, you answer all these questions, and then they come to me with the obscure questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want the book to be full of obscure questions.
I
want
see.
It to be really handy reference for the things that come up over and over again. Can I share books on my Kindle? How do I put another Kindle on my account? You know, the same things that just people ask repeatedly. So that's what I'm trying to focus on, is keeping it to the really frequently asked and common questions, and not get into the realm of, you know, real detailed, like I said, obscure. I think some of the other books handle some of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so this is what I really see as my niche.
Now, you said that one question which comes up a lot, and I've seen it also, is how to handle PDF files.
According to Amazon, PDFs are not an officially supported format. They're experimental. That said, you can convert PDFs to be on your Kindle. You have, you know, two options to do it. One is to email the file to your Kindle for the Amazon conversion service, and one is to use a program such as the Mobi Pocket Creator, which is for Windows and is free, that you can download, and then you can do the conversion yourself, you know, with the Mobi Pocket program, and then put it onto your Kindle. I've tried to convert a lot of different kinds of PDFs. You know, if it's really sort of plain text, it generally works. I had a physicist get in touch with me who wanted to know whether or not he should buy a Kindle, and he sent me a couple technical articles from a physics journal, and those failed spectacularly. They were terrible. And, you know, when I sent him some screenshots so he could see what it looked like, he said, oh, well, I guess I can't read my journal articles on a Kindle. So,
now, for that, you were trying the email conversion and the Mobi Pocket, and neither one of them worked?
And neither one worked.
I see.
Because, you know, they had a lot of tables and charts. They had a lot of formulas, had superscripts and subscripts, and those didn't come out, you know, and it looked awful.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't anything that you could even sort of say, well, I know it's not perfect, but I could still read it. Mm. I mean, you couldn't, you know, because, like, the whole formulas just didn't make sense. You know, the charts didn't have any numbers on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, you know, basically, you know, what Amazon has said. You know, if it's a very complex technical document, it's not likely to work. Simple PDFs, you know, if you have a, you know, a book or something, they tend to convert fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not perfect. I've had a few where, you know, there are little formatting glitches and paragraphs sometimes run together. But, you know, for basic reading, they're fine.
I'm on a Mac, so there's nothing that would be comparable to that Mobi Pocket conversion program for the Mac.
There's a program called Stanza, S-T-A-N-Z-A.
Right.
And it's free right now, although I understand that it will become a, you know, product for purchase sometime during 2009.
Mm-hmm.
The young woman in my office actually has a Mac at home, and so she's been using Stanza, and she uses Mobi Pocket here. And she says Stanza isn't as fully featured, but it does do the job.
How does Mobi Pocket compare with the conversion that you get if you use the experimental PDF converter and the email with Amazon?
Using Mobi Pocket, you can change things. So, and one of the things that a lot of people want is to be able to change the metadata in, like, the title of the book or the article and putting in, like, an author's name. When you email the article to yourself for the conversion through Amazon, your email address shows up as the author.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't change that.
I see.
But when you use Mobi Pocket, you could put in the author's name. And so then you'd have that on your home screen, you know, to sort by name, you know, title of the article or book, you know, title, author's name.
Is there any difference in the quality of the image that you get?
No. Not okay. That I mean, for the things that are going to work.
Yeah, yeah.
They seem to be the same.
The other thing that you're involved in, I see, is the Kindle boards.
Right. Yep, Kindle
and
board.
When did you start that?
Well, I didn't start it. It was actually started by a man named Harvey back in November, a year ago, November 2007.
Mm-hmm.
I joined the forum in April when I was waiting for my Kindle to arrive. I waited about a month for mine.
Mm-hmm.
And the forum was very quiet. Not very many people, but it was very quiet. And so, you know, I would check it, and then after a few months, I just sort of drifted away. Then in October, I think it really was sort of the surge of popularity after Oprah talked about the Kindle on her TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Things kind of got super active on the Amazon board, and it was a lot of the same frustrations that people had in terms of that you can't search and that you can't merge duplicate threads together.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like it wasn't pleasant. You know, people were kind of getting short-tempered and tired. And so I went back to the Kindle boards, and it was still very, very quiet. And so I just started putting on my posts on Amazon. I said, come join us at the Kindle boards. Come join us. Well, we had like 300 people join in 3 days.
Oh, that's great.
And it just sort of exploded. Meanwhile, Harvey, the owner, was sort of not around, you know.
And we
made a joke that we said, you know, we all arrived and started having a party in his living room while he was on vacation. I actually, you know, sent a couple emails to him, and I found out his daughter is also a member of the Kindle boards, and I sent her a message, and she got in touch with him and said, Dad, you may want to check that.
Yeah, there's something going on.
And he came and he was thrilled. And so it's been great since then. You know, Harvey's been really involved and very excited and enthusiastic. We just went over 1,300 members yesterday.
Wow.
So, and you know, it has, you know, a lot of the advantages that we don't have at Amazon. I've mentioned many times already searching,
yeah,
merge threads. But we can also post pictures. So one of the things, we have an FAQ at the Kindle boards, too. And from there, I can put screenshots and I can put pictures. So a lot of the things that are really hard to describe in words, you know, we can have an image that people will say, all right, now I understand what you're trying to tell me how to do it. We actually have a book club that just started today. We have about at least 30 people reading the same book, and they're getting ready to have an online discussion.
Huh.
People are posting pictures of what they think the characters look like.
Which book is it?
Outlander, which actually I have it on my Kindle, but I didn't join the discussion group because I just have too much other stuff going on. But
that's a great idea.
Yeah, and no, we have a couple. We have another. I mean, that's the first book at the club that's starting. We have another one starting at the beginning of February, which we're calling Read with the Author. And so the actual author of the book will be leading the discussion group. And that one is, the book's called In Her Name, and the author is Michael Hicks.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a couple other authors who belong to the forum who are interested in, you know, doing the same thing, leading discussion groups around their books. We have a chat feature so people can go and, you know, chat in real time.
Yeah. How much time are you spending on the forum then?
Too much.
Too much.
I'm putting a lot of time in, but it's fun.
So what else is on your homepage that's waiting for you to read when you get some time with your Kindle?
Well, I have a subscription to the New York Times, which I love,
mm-hmm,
and I read every day. I've been reading a lot of you know, more independent type authors or small press authors. So I'm reading a horror story right now by a guy named Rick Reed, and the book is called High Risk. I am reading another one called The Black Tower by Louis Bayard, which is a historical fiction.
Uh-huh.
It takes place in France after the French Revolution and sort of that restoration period. And that's probably what I've got active right now. You know, if you go and open the settings, if you go and open the little menu that shows with the content manager and settings,
right,
you'll see that there's a thing there that says update your Kindle, and it's currently grayed out. And, you know, I'm hoping that when they do some sort of a software upgrade that will give us some of these features that people want, you know, that will magically become live and we can click on it. You know, I have an iPhone, and, you know, last summer when they did the big software upgrade, which was, you know, when the 3G came out, you could either get the 3G or you could upgrade, you know, the present model, which is what I did. I didn't opt for a new one. And I'm really hoping that something like that happens with the Kindle, you know, that if they do a software upgrade, that they will make it available to all the present owners, you know, even if it's something that comes standard on a new version, if that's what's in our future. But I think the fact that that choice is there on that menu leads me to believe that they design this so that we will be able to upgrade the software, you know, at such time that they come out with a new, you know, version 2 of the software. Not version 2 of the Kindle, but version 2 of the software.
Right. Yeah, and you want to have something for people that don't buy the new version of it so they feel like they're making progress.
Right. Well, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, seem to have this fear that if a new version 2 of a Kindle comes out, that suddenly all of the other ones will stop working. Which, I'm not quite sure why people think that.
Yeah.
Because nothing else has ever stopped working
right.
when the new version comes out. You know, if a new version of a digital camera comes out, the old one still works.
Yeah.
New, you know, version of Windows, your old version of Windows still works. So I'm not quite sure why people think that the Kindle will suddenly become obsolete and they will be forced to buy a new one. I mean, and I don't know. I don't work for Amazon. I have no inside knowledge. But just, I feel that they're in this for the long haul.
I do, too. I mean, that would just be incredibly boneheaded customer relations to penalize people that were among the early adopters.
Exactly, exactly. So yeah. I think that, you know, it will continue to be functional, and we will see, you know, upgrades. And there was a press release that came out back in October at the time of the Frankfurt Book Fair, and they had hoped to debut the International Kindle at that fair, but mm-hmm. it said that they had not been able to work out all the agreements with the wireless carriers in right. Europe and the United Kingdom. So I really think that the priority for Amazon is to get to the international market.
Yeah, I think that's
with
right.
Versus coming up with a, you know, new hardware.
Yeah, and that, I think that's tough to get the wireless all untangled in places like Europe. It's and there's not even wireless everywhere in the U.S. now. So
right, right.
My last question for Leslie was, what tips you would have to someone who is brand new using a Kindle?
I think, you know, one is take advantage of samples. Mm-hmm. I think the sample feature is terrific, and it, you know, also helps you to be comfortable with the process of, you know, ordering books or samples, whether you do it from your Kindle or do it on your computer. It gives you the experience of, you know, becoming comfortable with, acquiring content, you know, but not having to pay for it.
Right.
So that's, you know, a nice way to do it, and, you know, check out the samples and see what they like. I would say to people, you know, spend some time playing with the different buttons and understanding how they work. I think the back button is one that a lot of people don't get, quote, mm-hmm. get, and it's, I find, incredibly useful. You know, it takes you back to the previous function. It's not the same thing as the previous page. It takes you back to your prior function. And I think the best way to see how it works is if you're reading a newspaper. And because, you know, the newspaper comes up with the index of all the articles. And, you know, that index may be several pages long. So say you've gone six pages into the index and then you pick the article to read. If you just go back to the beginning of the index, you know, that'll put you all the way back to the beginning where you started, versus if you use the back button, it puts mm-hmm. you where you left to go read the article.
Right.
You know, and to me, that was the one where I suddenly said, okay, now I get it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, playing around with the different buttons and seeing how they work, you know, I think opening all the menus and clicking on things, you can't hurt it. You can't break it. So,
right.
You know, play with it. Try searching for different things. You know, try using the lookup feature. Try making bookmarks. Try deleting bookmarks. So.
That's great advice, because I think I noticed with my wife, she's was so happy just to be reading with it that she really hasn't tried any of that stuff, and I think she's not getting the fullest experience that she could be getting if she'd been a little more adventurous at the beginning.
Yeah. So, you know, just, you know, sort of, it's different than reading a book, and it has features that a book doesn't have, and so I think, you know, it's worthwhile to invest a little bit of time becoming comfortable with those features.
Yeah.
I've said over and over to people, you know, I was never one to, like, sit and read with a dictionary next to me. I would just read, and if I didn't know what a word meant, I'd sort of puzzle it out and just keep on. Well, with the Kindle, I've, like, become hooked on using that lookup, and I've suddenly discovered, you know, my puzzling out wasn't all that accurate. You know, I'd get the gist of a word, but I didn't really get the full meaning of it. And then yesterday I was reading a newspaper article, and it had the word cavil, I don't know how to say it, C-A-V-I-L, didn't know what it meant. And I was like, "What's the lookup? Where's the lookup?" I wasn't reading the newspaper on my Kindle. I was reading an actual piece of paper. And I was just like, you know, I said, it was surprising to me how much that has changed for me, where I had never used a dictionary routinely while I'm reading. Suddenly, it's like, I love that feature.
It's amazing. To me, it just makes reading so much more active when you can do that. And then the other thing I sometimes do is use the Wikipedia lookup and, mm-hmm. you know, say somebody from history that I'm not too sure of, and just take a little 5-minute diversion to put some context to what I'm reading.
Yep. And we started a thread on the Kindle boards where, you know, people are actually listing the words they look up, new words that they've learned.
Oh, that's a great idea.
It is. And it's amazing the words that pop up. You know, I'll say, well, I never heard of that word.
Yeah. The other thing I found myself doing was reading a regular book and kind of instinctively trying to make the font bigger. So where's the font button on this stupid thing?
Yep. I have to admit, I have, like, really sort of moved away from paper books.
I have too. You know, I just, if I've had the experience of having someone recommend a book, and if it isn't on Kindle, I'll just say, well, there's lots of other books that are.
Yep. I know. That's really what's happened to me. And I have two books sitting on, you know, on my to-be-read pile, which I want to read both of them, but I just sort of can't pick them up.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I want to thank Leslie for the interview and again remind you that you might want to just pick up your Kindle right now, press the search key. If you enter the @ and STORE store, @store, you'll go direct to the Amazon store. And then if you type in the search line Leslie, that's LESLIEH, middle initial, period, Nickel, NICOLL, the top item that will appear is the Amazon Kindle. The Amazon Kindle FAQ. I call it FAQ. I don't know if anybody else does, but she called it FAQ. So it's the Amazon Kindle FAQ for $1.59. And I think that's a pretty good buy in the world of ways that you can learn really how to get the most out of your Kindle. The Kindle quote this week is from a new weekly publication called Cash, Personal Finance for Real People. The Kindle edition is doing very well. It's number 5 among magazines at the Kindle store. It's ahead of such worthies as The Atlantic and Forbes, and a subscription costs only $1.49 a month. I was interested enough in it to let the two-week free trial go by, and I think I'll probably keep it going for a while because there's some valuable stuff in it. An example is this week's edition, which has an article that I've been waiting for someone to write. Elizabeth Odie, an associate editor for Kiplinger's Personal Finance magazine, tracked down a rare specimen of financial analyst, one who correctly predicted the market crash last fall. She actually found several, and she asked them what they are predicting for 2009. I'll begin this quote from her first savant, Nouriel Roubini, who is chairman of RGE Monitor and a professor at New York University. She sets each of these up by saying what they said. And so what this fellow said back on September 7, 2006, in a speech to the International Monetary Fund, quote, "There's going to be a recession next year. The bursting of the housing bubble, we have not seen it yet, is going to lead to broader systemic banking problems. It is going to start with the subprime lenders, and then it is going to be transmitted to other banks and financial institutions all over the country." So he had that one pretty right a little early if he was predicting a recession in 2007. I guess actually they're saying that's when it did start, so that he was pretty well on the mark. And his prediction for 2009 isn't too rosy, according to this Cash magazine article. Quote, "I expect that the recession will be very severe and that it won't be over before the end of 2009. And even though we might technically be out of recession in 2010, annual growth could be just 1.0% to 1.5% for several years if the credit crunch remains severe. I think there is further 15% to 20% downside risk for global and U.S. stocks, and a further 15% to 20% downside risk for commodity prices. So 2009 will be a year of recession and deflation." That's the Kindle quote this week from Cash Magazine. Will Delamater of EduKindle did some hunting for Seven Pillars of Wisdom by T.E. Lawrence, because that was mentioned by Army Captain and Kindler Starbuck in Kindle Chronicles 23. He wrote a long email in which he described how he had gone looking for Seven Pillars at Gutenberg. It wasn't listed, which was his first indication, and then also feed books, and then he posted a question on the Kindle store. He was able to find two versions of the book for the Kindle on sale there, but these editions were published by individuals in Germany and Romania, and Will writes, are almost certainly in violation of U.S. copyright on the book. He continues, "I did find a copy in PRC format in a post at Mobile Read, but that had a very appropriate disclaimer about copyright attached. All told, I believe that downloading a copy of Seven Pillars for the Kindle or any other reader in the U.S. at this time violates copyright. Interesting dilemma, though the right course of action is clear. Buy a print copy if you want to read it, as with so many other books, or go to the library. But the ready availability of the file in the places I mentioned, but most obviously at Gutenberg, Australia, where the work is in the public domain, makes this an interesting case." Will writes, "For one, this situation points up the problem with a volatile combination of an international patchwork of copyright law and easy international distribution of the files. If any of your guests or readers have a comment, I would be interested. That's from Will Delamater, and he has a great Kindle-related blog at edukindle.com. Stephen Schwint of Staten, Oregon, on January 2nd wrote, "I was in China when I first got my Kindle delivered to my dad in Oregon. I used it constantly there. I had many Chinese people ask me if they could get Chinese language books on the Kindle. I know Jeff Bezos wants all books in all languages on the Kindle, but I don't think we are there yet. Now that I am back in Oregon, I use WhisperNet every day. I thought downloading books with a USB drive was easy, but with WhisperNet, it's even easier. I bought a second Kindle for Dad for Christmas during the Oprah event. He reads his Kindle every day. He is 86 years old, but loves his Kindle. We share books on my account, so he has about 30 of my books on his Kindle. I listen to your podcast within minutes of getting it every Friday." Well, thanks, Stephen. I love imagining your 86-year-old dad reading his Kindle. A listener who was waiting for her Kindle to arrive emailed me on January 2nd with the following comment. "Hi, I just listened to the podcast. Thanks for all the info. I'm one of those people waiting for my Kindle to arrive in February. I'm hoping it will be the latest version. My husband, who ordered it as a surprise Christmas gift, sent an email asking if it would be a version 2, and the response was a non-committing stock response. So I'll find out next month. I'll be subscribing to your podcast on iTunes, and I read your blog regularly. Thanks again, and Happy New Year, Mary." Mary, I hope you'll let me know if when your Kindle arrives, your nice gift from your husband, if it's a version 2 or a version 1. I haven't actually gone ahead and ordered one yet. I think I'm going to wait another week or so before I order one, hoping that I'll be surprised and have it be a 2.0. A lengthy comment left on the show notes page by Karen, also on January 2nd, took a much less enthusiastic view of the new version. And this relates to the news that I had last week that I thought that the new version was be coming out in February, and that if you ordered one that you would be getting it, whether or not it's announced yet. Here's some excerpts from Karen's comments, and you can read them in their entirety at thekindlechronicles.com for episode 24. She mentions rumor book photos, and when I Googled that, I couldn't find anything. I think she's just referring to the photos that appeared on October 2nd at boygeniusreport.com's blog. In any event, Karen writes, "I can't imagine anyone receiving the poorly designed and feature-crippled device shown in the 2.0 rumor book photos and not being extremely angry. Perhaps if they drop the price to under $100, people will buy it, but otherwise it's a major step backwards for the Kindle, but would be an improvement for the Sony reader, adding a keyboard and wireless to their non-expandable unit with non-replaceable battery. The huge form factor alone is enough to render the rumor book too unwieldy to carry around. It won't fit into most purses, no carrying it around for women to read while shopping, and it won't fit into a uniform pocket, unusable for many in the military, or the oversized pockets of many men's travel shirts. It might fit into a briefcase a bit better, but that market no doubt will wait for a much larger screen so they can read the paper a bit easier, preferably as PDFs at that level as well. Something that may be several years in the future. The larger size will also make it harder to fit onto a table for reading at the coffee shop, although not impossible. Why would people believe that Amazon will remove features and move to a cheap slipcover, no padding for the fragile screen, while going backward in both keyboard design and form factor, then ship the Lite, L-I-T-E, Kindle to those who purchased a more capable unit, especially when it is against their policy to do such a thing?" Well, Karen, I want to thank you for the comment. I hope you're wrong about the next version being such a big disappointment, but if it turns out that way, we're going to have your prediction here in the archives to refer back to. And I appreciated your articulate message. You really get your point across with some lively writing there, which I always appreciate. I received an email also on January 2nd from Rebecca, who was glad that her question on an earlier episode had prompted such an informative answer last week from tech writer and columnist Mike Elgin. She wrote, "Wow, it was cool hearing my name and to hear what Mike Elgin thought about how Amazon is making money on the Kindle. Good work, a loyal fan, Rebecca." Bob Cope on January 3rd wrote, "We The Kindle Corner has turned into mostly fashionistas comparing covers and bodice rippers, so I enjoy your podcast on Friday nights. I've sold a couple of thousand Kindles by now. With the feed books, many books, Gutenberg Project, etc., I call it a branch library in your hand, or an iPod for the mind. As an old English major and Air Force colonel, I'm looking at so much to read and so little time. Version 2 should be interesting. Cheers, Bob. Well, I like the Kindle Corner. I'm not sure it's... I'd agree with Bob's description of it, but I'm glad that he enjoys the podcast, and thanks for writing a lively message. January 6th, I received an email from Paul Higginbotham of Charleston, West Virginia. Hello, Len. Your discussion with Mike Elgin was your best interview yet. I'm looking forward to hearing the second part of the interview. As per your reliable source on the pending release of Kindle 2.0, did he/she give any indication that some of the software upgrades might be passed on to version 1 in a software update? Unlike a lot of Kindle users, I'm perfectly happy with the form factor of version 1.0. I just like to see a few software improvements, such as folders, which seem to be something Amazon could do with a patch or two. Thanks again for the great podcast. Keep up the good work. I emailed back to Paul that I certainly hope any software will be available to original units via the grayed out update feature that Leslie Nickel referred to in the interview. My source thought otherwise, so we'll see how that one turns out. The following interesting tidbit was emailed a couple of days ago from Linda Hopkins, who wrote, "Hi, Len. I have been having a problem with my Kindle where the battery is draining quickly, or the battery indicator is not showing the correct charge. I am working with Amazon on this issue. The interesting thing is that today I called support to follow up on some testing they asked me to do, and the techie had me turn on the wireless. He was then able to download to his computer the logs from my Kindle. He told me that the Kindle tracks all sorts of stats, and tech support will apparently be able to determine how well my Kindle is charging and how the battery is functioning from the stats. I found this very exciting. The Kindle functionality is pretty thorough for a 1.0 version, but a little scary when you think about privacy issues. I don't really want to make my Kindle ailments public, but I was wondering if the Kindle logs were public knowledge. It reminds me of the black boxes in today's cars." Linda, P.S. I asked the techie if he had any information on version 2.0. He said it's in the works, but that's all we know. So that's a very intriguing bit of information that Linda's passing along, that somehow there's the ability to, and I suppose, I don't know if you have to get permission to download that technical data or what, but it looks like there is information on our Kindles that Amazon can access, hopefully we'd have to assume for our own good. Joe D. Clark of Charlotte, North Carolina emailed me today. "Len, I want to apologize for my delay in emailing you to tell you how much I enjoy your weekly podcast. I really look forward to it each week and find it very informative and up to date. I bought my Kindle during Oprah Week and I really love it," in capital letters. "I find myself reading more for enjoyment now. I have seen the future and it is definitely the Kindle. I can see that it will not replace all books, but for novels and biographies it is unbeatable. Books with lots of pictures, charts, etc. do not seem to adapt to the Kindle as well. As an old CPA, I remember when the first handheld calculator came out, the price was over $500. Newer technology brought the prices way down, the same for computers. I think we are truly in the infancy of e-books, and it will be exciting to see how it progresses. But I know one thing, it is only going to get bigger. Also, a tip for you. I accidentally discovered that Amazon is currently making Murder List by Julie Garwood free to Kindle owners. Not sure why. She is a very popular and successful author. She may just be trying to expand her market. Keep up the good work, Len. We sure appreciate what you're doing for us Kindle nuts. Joe D. Clark." No apology necessary, Joe, and thanks for the good comments. And finally, I can't resist passing along a tweet that I saw from Colinas, who on January 4th left the following tribute on Twitter to what a Kindle can do for your image. Quote, "On plane number 2, man next to me has a Kindle. He must be awesome." If you're feeling awesome and you want to send me a comment, I'd love to hear from you. You can leave me an audio comment at my voice line at 206-666-2713. or you can email me at podchronicles@gmail.com or leave a comment on the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. If you're handy with such things, please feel free to record an MP3 audio file and email it to me. It's always fun to hear the voices of listeners on the show for the Kindle comments, so I'd love to hear from you. Before I tell you about next week's guest, I'm going to draw a name from my wool hat. And I've got them all here, 40 names, and I'm shuffling them up. You can hear me shuffling them. And it's too late. My wife went to bed, so I'm going to have to do it myself, but I'm doing it with my eyes closed. Okay, I've pulled out a winner, and the winner of the $10 gift certificate is Pam. I've got your email, and I'll put it through the Kindle store tonight or tomorrow, and hope you'll enjoy buying a book courtesy of the Kindle Chronicles. And thanks to everyone who's joined the Kindle Chronicles email alert list. Next week, I'm scheduled to interview a consultant, author, and entrepreneur widely regarded as one of the pioneers of podcasting, Michael Gohagan, who is also a Kindle enthusiast. So I'm looking forward to that. I've been working with a really great podcast consultant, Adam Weiss, in Boston, on changing the way I distribute my podcast and setting up a new show notes page on a WordPress blog. That's going to go into effect as of next week's show. So you may there may be some glitches. I think we've got it pretty well planned, but it's possible that if you're subscribing to the podcast, you might see some duplicate feeds. And if for some reason you don't receive the next podcast, simply resubscribe at thekindlechronicles.com. And send me an email if you're having any problems. I'll be glad to help you. I think it's going to be a good way to distribute the podcast. It should be more searchable on Google and have a little more robust setup in general. So I want to thank Adam Weiss for working with me on that and hope you enjoy the new look that will be coming your way on the podcast as of next week. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monegat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA Promonet. This is Len Edgerly from downtown Denver for the Kindle Chronicles, reminding you to read different. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.